Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Now, here's your host, a man who thinks Labor Day means you walk the course that day, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. Once again, we are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. It's week two of the FedEx playoffs, and it finds the PGA Tour in Boston for the final time in the foreseeable future, as this will not be a stop on next year's schedule. See, the playoffs go from four events to three, and this appears to be the one who couldn't find a chair when the music stopped. Congrats to Bryson DeChambeau. Look, he's a little quirky, a little moody, maybe too smart for his own good sometimes, but I tell you what, that guy can golf his ball, and with his win last week at the Northern Trust, he moved to number one in the FedEx Cup overall standings and all but wrapped up a captain's pick spot on the Ryder Cup team this year. We'll discuss the FedEx Cup and the Ryder Cup with Ron Mintz of Fansided.com and Ron Green Jr. from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. Also, we'll start our pre- and early season check-ins with some of our local college coaches, beginning with Andrew DiBattista, head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heel men's golf team. But we begin with Ron Green Jr. Well, Ron, I want to get started talking about the Ryder Cup. After last week, I think we know it would be kind of ridiculous if Bryson DeChambeau did not get named to the Ryder Cup team. I think it's a fait accompli that both Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods are going to be named to the Ryder Cup team, which leaves that one captain's pick that's kind of up in the air. Do you feel like Jim Furyk is leaning more towards a veteran, or could he go with a Tony Finau? What is your vibe hanging out with Furyk last week?
My vibe is I think Tony Finau is the guy right now you have to unseat. I really, you know, in theory, this thing where you go, you save four picks, you pick three of them, you save one to the very end. In theory, I get it. But in reality, I don't really love the way they're doing this. I think they should go ahead and just do them. Do them all at once. I don't like holding that one last out there. Because say you're Tony Finau and you get picked, well, yeah, you're excited to be on the team, but okay, you know, I'll go ask guy in and, you know, and all that. I don't know. I just, maybe I'm putting too much into that, but I know a lot of people are sort of feeling the same way. But I think it's Tiger, Phil, Bryson DeChambeau, and Finau at the moment. Now, if Patrick Cantlay or Kevin Kisner wins this week, then maybe just pause for a second. But I think Finau has done so much and offers so much potential in terms of four balls and stuff that, I think you got to go that way. I don't know who you would take as a third. I don't think there's any way you take Thad Kuchar. I don't think there's any way you take Zach Johnson right now. I think Zach for sure is going to be a vice captain.
You know, I think that the final pick is a classic overreaction to a one-time situation. If memory serves, that came right after Billy Horschel got hotter than a match and won two out of the last four events and finished second, I think, in Boston. I think in the FedEx Cup, he had one second and two firsts, and it didn't get him. You know, the Ryder Cup had already been named, and everyone's like, well, wouldn't we like to have Horschel on the team? And so that last pick was delayed until then, and I think what we've discovered is what an outlier situation that really was.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's well-intentioned, but I think the practicality of it is probably not what you want. And I think, you know, the good thing for Jim Furyk is he has a lot of very good options. And I think, I think he's pretty well narrowed it down. But, you know, he will at least, like I said, if one of those other guys suddenly has a great week in Boston and then rolls it over into Philadelphia, maybe something changes, but I don't think so at the moment.
How do the players feel about the FedEx Cup? We're not 10 years into this, and I realize it's a huge amount of money. I mean, who doesn't want to play for $10 million? And it's 4 weeks. But I just wonder if the players at this point after the last major, are they just kind of, oh, well, we'll get through these last 4 weeks? Or is there a buzz among them? Because I get the feeling that sometimes it's kind of like they're going through the motions.
I don't know if I'd call it a buzz. I think they like what the FedEx Cup playoffs are because if you get in, you're making money. I mean, you're guaranteed money from the playoff pool. So I think they love when they're guaranteed money, but then who doesn't? And you know, I think they appreciate it for what it is. I think they're going to like it even better next year when it's three events. But, even being up there like at Ridgewood, you don't get a real sizzle factor with it. I mean, it's a golf tournament, and it's nice, but put it in perspective, Tiger Woods was finishing at 2 o'clock on Sunday as DeChambeau was going off of the last group. And it's no exaggeration to say Tiger had 10 times more people following him.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is our guest taking Dead Aim. Thank you so much for bringing up the schedule. I hadn't really thought about it that much. And then it occurred to me that perhaps next year I will be a little blasé when the major championship season is over at the end of July. But look, I know you're this way too. We love golf. We cover golf. God knows you travel all over the world covering golf. You've loved the sport your whole life. But we're also sports fans as well. And I can't help it. This time of year, as much as I love golf, I'm more interested in what the Panthers are doing right now in preseason, what my favorite college teams are doing. And I think it's a really good thing that we're going to be done by Labor Day weekend and we're going to be out of the way of football.
Yeah, I think it's the right thing to do. I think you're right. I mean, everybody, player, golfers included, I think sort of feels like it's football season. And now, they're still going to have plenty of options to play next year. I think they're going to actually, you know, with the FedEx Cup playoffs ending August 25th, there's going to be a little break because they've got to work in the web finals and all that. But I think they're going to have plenty of chances to play in the fall if they want, maybe a couple extra tournaments added. And then I think I think you want to miss golf for a while. Golf doesn't give you a whole lot, professional golf doesn't give you a whole lot of opportunity to miss it right now because they just sort of keep playing. But I think what they're doing is going to be better, at least in terms of building up to the end of the season.
Ron, when you get to this time of year, and I know that you were at Greensboro for a while, and then you, of course, you were up for the first playoff, but especially Greensboro, where it's everybody's last chance to get into that 125, and it's really fun as a viewer when you're watching on TV to see, okay, this guy's got to birdie this hole to climb inside the top 125. But there's always those hard luck stories, and it never fails. They're usually some of the best guys on tour. Who were some of the guys who finished outside the top 125 or even the top 150 this year that you're like, oh, man, I hate that happened?
Well, one that jumps to mind is Bill Haas. Finished 152nd. You know, I mean, yeah, we'll top 125 to get your full privileges. 126, the fifth 150 of FedEx Cup. You know, you get a good number of starts. You don't get to pick your spots, but you get spots to play, you know, 15, 18 tournaments. But he finished 157. So unless he uses his career money list, which he doesn't do, he's going to play out of the past champions category, which means a little fewer options. Now, he'll get some sponsor exemptions, and I think Bill Haas will get plenty of chances, but that was one, given the whole arc of his season and what happened with the accident, that was, you know, really sort of surprising. And then the fact that Sergio Garcia never got the engine started. Finished like 128, missed, I think, 8 cuts in his last 10 starts or something. Hard guy for Thomas Field to add to that Ryder Cup team, but I'd still be surprised if he doesn't do it.
Yeah, I will be too. You know, I think those are two good examples of how life can get in the way or intervene in your golf game, and it happens to everybody, even the best in the world. You brought up the tragedy in Los Angeles where the guy who was driving Bill Haas passed away behind the wheel in that car wreck, and Sergio Garcia not only got married but had his first child and seems to be, you know, really blissful with being a dad, and you and I both know that that sort of thing can distract you from the job from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, and I just think, you know, when Sergio went out there and nothing happened, and, you know, he just sort of got the flat Sergio out there. I mean, other guys had difficulties. You know, Brant Snedeker, until he won a Wyndham, was 80th, which isn't bad, but it wasn't, you know, the season he would have wanted. You know, I mean, it's hard. It's really, really hard. You don't have to be far off to sort of just start drifting down. I mean, look at the guy now. Granted, he's fought some issues, but when's the last time you heard Jimmy Walker's name other than the Faraday promo? You know, it's just, it's the nature of the game.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. We've mentioned that both Tiger and Phil, there's a 99.9% chance they're going to be named to the Ryder Cup team. But the next time the Ryder Cup rolls around, Phil Mickelson will be 50 years old. Tiger will be, what, 44, 45 years old when the next Ryder Cup rolls around. Are we seeing the end of days where they could possibly make the team automatically? Or do you see the possibility of a 50-year-old Phil Mickelson grinding it out for 2 years and making the team?
Well, I could see Phil making it a point to make the team as a 50-year-old. I mean, this is the first time he's made it as a pick, not as a automatic qualifier, so that was, you know, one incentive they didn't quite make. I think Phil's realistic, you know, and the pipeline is set up. I mean, let me sit here and tell you who the next Ryder Cup captains are going to be. It's going to be Steve Stricker and Winston Straits. It's going to be Tiger Woods, and it's going to be Phil Mickelson, because Phil wants to do the one at Bethpage. Now, that could change, but I think that's the list written in pencil right now. So, you know, Phil, he's made a point through the years of talking about how his swing is one that doesn't do a lot of damage to his body, and he's been able to stay healthy through the years, which he has compared to other guys. So I think his question is always incentive, motivation, sort of engagement in it, and he sort of locks in and locks out. And I think after he won at Mexico this year, gradually went flat this year. It's a huge ask to think he could do it as a 50-year-old, but and Tiger too, but, I mean, I think, you know, certainly have reason to think they could. Whether they will or not, I don't know.
Well, and you got to think that that's the sort of thing that's going to motivate them. I can see Tiger Woods being motivated by the thought of being the first playing captain since, God, the 60s or early 70s. I'd have to go back in the list and see who was captain at those times. But I know it's been 40 years at least since we had a playing captain on the Ryder Cup. I could see that motivating him, because you and I both know I can see Phil and I can see Tiger showing up to play a U.S. Senior Open, but I don't see either one of them grinding it out on a weekly basis on the Champions Tour ever.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they play a couple big events in senior golf, but I don't see them, you know, I don't see them showing up all the time at the SAS Championship.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they have different goals. They're different places. You know, Tiger's going to be, think about this, Tiger's the President's Cup captain next year in Australia.
I mean, that's right.
Now, he might be a playing captain there. But you know, I think both of them, they obviously don't have to accomplish anything else. They've done so much. But I think I wouldn't be shocked to see one of them make another Ryder Cup team as a player.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. A question about Tiger. I know that I have seen more of Tiger Woods this year than I ever thought we'd see. I think he's learned a lot about what he can and can't do. Heading into the next year, do you think we see more of Tiger, less of Tiger, or about what we've seen this year?
I think fairly similar. I think he will, you know, he gets himself back up in some World Golf Championship events where he can qualify for it. So I think we'll see him structure his schedule. You know, I don't think we'll see him in Hawaii. I think you'll see him at Torrey Pines. You'll see him at L.A. because he's involved there. You know, they'll go to, I think he would play Mexico if he qualifies. He'll play Bay Hill. He'll play the Players. I don't think he'll play Valspar. Be interesting to see if he plays Honda. I don't know if he loves Honda, even though he lives down there. But I think he'll play. He likes to play, and I think he wants to play. And you know, I think we may get back to a more familiar sort of Tiger schedule.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green Jr. And up next, we begin our annual pre- and early season check-ins with some of our local college coaches. First up, head men's golf coach Andrew DiBattista takes Dead Aim at his 2018-2019 North Carolina Tar Heels. Presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors, Andrew DiBattista is entering his second year as the head men's golf coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, and we got the chance to catch up this week.
Well, Coach, let's start with my jealousy. All right, we're going to get this out of the way early. My Mount Rushmore of courses that are nearly impossible to get on, in no particular order: Augusta National, Cypress Point, Seminole, and Pine Valley. I bring this up because last weekend I look at my Twitter feed and picture number one from North Carolina men's golf. Bags are loaded in the vans for our annual season kickoff trip. You've done this a lot. And I'm like, okay, maybe they're going to Pinehurst. Maybe they're going down to South Carolina, to Kiowa. Yeah, I'll be. Picture number two. We've arrived and you're in front of the sign at Pine Valley. So I want to thank you once again for the call to help chaperone the trip this year. Appreciate it.
Sorry. We left you a couple of voicemails. Those weird
yes, somehow they just didn't get to me, yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that. No, but it was certainly a great way to start the year. Something that we kind of put into play last year, not just a team retreat, but we try to have some fun with it. And really, it's like it's a surprise or mystery for the guys. We don't tell them where we're going. We just give them a pack list. And you know me, we kind of like to mess with them a little bit. Coach Clark is the exact same way. So, you know, we might throw some things in there that they don't exactly need, but, you know, they're assuming that they need it. Like, for example, the Pine Valley trip, we had them show up at 5 o'clock in the morning wearing dress pants, dress shirts, and a coat. We told them as soon as we landed in Philly that they were going to be going to a business meeting. So overall, it was a great trip, phenomenal golf course, and just honestly, just really special to be with some pretty special Tar Heels up there and, you know, have the guys, give them the opportunity to be around some of the Carolina family.
Well, absolutely. And it's not like they didn't need those sport coats, because if memory serves, when you are going to dine at Pine Valley, there's jacket and, yes, and maybe even jacket and tie required.
Yes. Well, to be honest, it's part of the strategy, right? So you have young men. Some of them are kind of neat and tidy, but not really. This is actually Coach Clark's idea. I mean, we were trying to figure out, all right, what is the best way for these guys to just, you know, have a coat that isn't completely wrinkled? Well, if they wear it, it can't be that bad. So, they look pretty good at dinner. And going back, so to really just crush you here, and I apologize. I think you know this, but we actually took the team to play Cypress in April. That took place 2 days before the Western Intercollegiate, which we won out west. And then I was fortunate enough where I got an invite to play Seminole. I think it was in late February, maybe early March. So your bucket list, of course, is I've checked off three of them for you. So
well, I've played Augusta six times, so there.
Hey, you win.
Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach at the University of North Carolina. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, let's get serious for a second. For the second year in a row, I kind of look at your program in somewhat of a period of transition, albeit for different reasons. I mean, last year was your first as the coach, but you'd been the assistant for years. It was kind of a natural progression. This year is the first time in, God, I guess 3 to 4 years, that there's a couple of names you won't have in your starting lineup. Griffin and Register are gone. Also, you lose Montaño. And I did some counting. That's 122 tournaments played between the three of them in their careers. That's some big leadership boots.
Yes, we have certainly lost a lot. I mean, I'll take that even a step further, right? So Carolina golf is pretty special. The history is pretty strong. Davis Love III, Mark Wilson, John Inman, Bill Williamson, Harvey Ward. I mean, some pretty fantastic players. And those three guys that you just mentioned, they graduated and have left our program ranked first, second, and fourth in career stroke average in the history of Carolina golf.
Wow.
Yes, there are some holes to fill in the starting lineup, but I really like our team. I don't know that we have the big stud or the big name that is, you know, recognizable across the country, but I promise you have a bunch of guys that are very willing to do anything it takes to kind of change that and to kind of make sure that they put their stamp, not just across the board nationally, but, you know, within our program and really start to kind of make some noise.
Well, let's talk about some of the guys that are coming back. You've got Josh Martin's played in 28 events, Pryor Fountain 16, Austin Hitt 24. It's not like you're walking in with people who have never stepped on the first tee before, and I know there's probably some big things expected, especially out of Josh Martin.
Yeah, Josh, you know, he had a pretty solid year last year, especially coming down the stretch there. You know, he played solid at regionals, played solid at the national championship. He was named an All-American. I mean, so, you know, we are returning an All-American to our starting lineup. He's also a guy that worked really hard in the summer. It was very similar to the Ben Griffin story from a couple of years ago. But, you know, Josh's short game is unbelievable. His mind is unbelievable. And really, if the driver would kind of be a little bit more kind to him, I think you'd see some really, really low scores. And a credit to him, he came in right after the national championship and basically said, you know, coach, I want to play this game for a really long time. And I feel like with the current state of my game, I don't know that I'd be able to do that. So I want to make some changes and I'd kind of like to start working with someone different. Do you have any thoughts and ideas? So he's now working with a different guy. It's a guy in Pinehurst. And I would say he's, you know, feeling pretty good about his game. He won the Carolinas Amateur this summer. I think it was by 5 shots, which, as you know, that the state of North Carolina and South Carolina is very strong. So for him to do that was a big step in the right direction. And, you know, so far so good to start qualifying.
You know, I think we've talked about this before, but it bears restating. You said that he started working with someone else. I think people have the wrong idea at times that the college coaches and you guys are ones working individually with the players. That's rarely the case. Most of the time, these guys have coaches and instructors that they've had for many years coming in. What is your relationship like with those guys, the guys who have worked for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, maybe longer with your players?
Yeah, I think, you know, every coach across the country probably does it a little bit differently. You know, but my mindset and the belief and philosophy of our program, you know, obviously this includes Coach Clark, is we are certainly knowledgeable about the golf swing. You know, but I feel like we are much better with course management and self-management. And then the other thing, too, is when you get to instructors, so a lot of instructors, they just don't have the time to go out and watch their students play not just 18 holes of competition, but 54 holes of competition, 72 holes of competition. You know, so the swing might look amazing on the range, or you tweak this, you tweak that, and then what happens? Well, the green light goes on and pressure exists, you know, and that's when things really kind of start to cross lines and, you know, and get a little iffy, or that's when guys play their best and perform their best. You know, so that's where we kind of step in, and I feel like that's our strong suit, is just those relationships out on the golf course. You know this, but I just feel like, I don't really feel like I'm a coach out there. I feel like I'm a caddy, you know, and I just do everything we can, and Coach Clark's the same way, to support our guys. And then in that moment, you build those relationships and you kind of figure out, you know, when to kind of kick a guy in the rear and maybe when to put an arm around a guy. But in terms of the relationships with the swing coaches, we just have really good communication. You know, so if Austin Hitt goes back down to Florida to get a lesson, I mean, it's usually either that afternoon or the next day that we're on the phone, whether it's texting or a phone call or whatever the case is, you know, with his swing instructor to make sure that we're all on the same page. And I mean, I will say 99% of the time, what thoughts we might have at home in Chapel Hill very much match, you know, what the instructor with the swing coach is telling them. They might just use a little bit different language. But at the end of the day, we're all working together and working towards the same goal, which is to make sure that our guys are playing the best golf they can play.
Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach at the University of North Carolina, our guest taking dead aim. Let's talk about some more guys on your team. I'd be remiss. You know, the homeboy here, I need to ask about Mason Elmore. He's a sophomore now out of Ardrey-Kell.
Yeah, he's doing well. You could see a difference already. He's kind of stepped in and just a little bit more vocal, a little bit more of a leader this year. You know, you kind of transition from, you know, first-year freshman. Now you've been in it for a year, you know, you come in as a sophomore. And I just think losing the three seniors that we lost, obviously, you know, it leaves holes and all that. But what it also creates is just opportunity for other guys to step up in so many different ways. It allows guys to step up, not just golf scores and, you know, and performance on the golf course, but just different roles on our team. Like, who's kind of the butt kicker? Who is the guy that holds people accountable? You know, who's the comedian, who's the leader? And I don't know that we just have one leader. I think we got a bunch of leaders right now. And I think guys are really, really excited because I think they've known for a while, like, hey, you know, this is kind of Ben Griffin's team. Hey, this is William Register's team. Hey, you know, Jose Montano, he wasn't, you know, he was a different type of leader. He was quiet, but he kind of just led by example. You know, so now we have all these guys that kind of look around and say, hey, they're not here anymore. You know, what I'm going to bring to the table is more than what I've brought in the past. And Mason's certainly one of those guys. The other one, too, is Ryan Gerard. We haven't talked about him yet. You know, he had a solid freshman year. In the fall, the adjustment was a little bit difficult on him. I think he averaged, you know, 73.0 playing mostly as an individual. And then he broke through in the spring, got in the lineup. He led our team for basically three or four straight tournaments. Had six straight top 20 finishes, and was a big part of what we did in the spring. And I think he's going to be a really big part of what we do right now, because you talk about a leader. I mean, he's kind of like the Energizer Bunny, and he's very, very fiery. And I think, you know, guys look to that, and there are certain moments where you kind of need that fire and you need that intensity. You know, so he's another guy that I think is going to be huge for us.
Before we hit on your fall schedule, I want to ask you about your freshmen. It's always interesting with freshmen coming in to a Division I college program in that, you know, they've got to adjust to being freshmen at college and adjust to life at college. And it's always sort of interesting to see how fast they make that transition in addition to being a D1, you know, golf athlete and whatnot. Tell me about your three freshmen.
Love them. Love them, love them. You know, Ryan Burnett is probably, you know, just on paper, the most accomplished out of the three of them. So you have Ryan Burnett from Northern California. You have Dougie Ergood from New Jersey. And you have Luis Castro from the Philippines. So Ryan comes in on paper is probably the most accomplished. You know, he's the top 10 player coming in. He played on the AJGA Wyndham Cup team, the West team, obviously. This summer, he represented Team USA in June at the Toyota World Junior Cup over in Japan, which is, you know, just four American boys and four American girls. He just played at the U.S. Amateur, and after one round, he was in 12th place in stroke play. I think he finished in 24th place in stroke play and, you know, got knocked out in the first round by Davis Riley, who's, you know, just an absolute stud down at Alabama. But he, you know, he lost 2-1, and he just gained a lot of confidence and said, you know, I really belong. You know, and he's come in, and we went, you know, the trip to Pine Valley. He actually kind of put a little bit of a whooping on everybody else. And then you have Dougie Ergood, who, you know, in the recruiting process, we just fell in love with Dougie pretty quick. He's a multi-sport athlete, baseball, basketball, black belt, and taekwondo, relatively new to competitive golf. And anybody who sees him play, you know, you can see the talent, but everybody kind of describes him as raw. But I'll tell you what, the other thing that this kid has is he is just relentless in his pursuit of just simply getting better. And he's a sponge. He wants to learn as much as he can. And he has just this massive chip on his shoulder to just kind of go to work and prove people wrong. And it's a little bit interesting because through two rounds of qualifying, Dougie Ergood is currently leading, which, you know, as a coach, you want everybody to play well. But if a situation like that happens, you don't mind it, you know, because I think it wakes everybody up that, you know, hey, you know, one of the new guys is here and, you know, he's ready to go and he's kind of not messing around. And then Luis Castro has a ton of international experience. He's literally played all over the globe. He's won some pretty big tournaments and he just got back from the Asian Games. So he was selected to represent the Philippines. So he just spent 2 weeks over there. So he just got to campus. So he's a little bit behind. And really the message to him has just been, hey, get settled, like get your feet underneath you, go see your professors, get caught up in school, you know, oh, by the way, move into your dorm room, you know, golf right now is kind of at the bottom of the totem pole for him. He doesn't like that, but that's kind of what it needs to be right now, because if he comes in and he just focuses on golf, the other parts are going to go downhill. It's going to cause stress and then it's going to be a mess. So he has not played yet. He's been trying to get life organized. We are on the road again this weekend for some qualifying down in Pinehurst, and that'll be the first time that he kind of tees it up with us. So we're excited about all three of them.
Get you out of here on this. Coach Andrew DiBattista, head men's golf coach, University of North Carolina, our guest taking Dead Aim. I don't know how in advance you make the schedules, but your fall schedule is very different from what I've seen in the last several years. Some places that you haven't gone before. The Rod Meyers coming up next week, that's really nothing new. You've done that. But we're going to Louisville, we're going to Notre Dame, and we're going to Dallas this fall.
Yep. Just made some tweaks to it. I mean, you're always trying to create new and different opportunities for the guys. And obviously put people in a position to be successful. So the Duke thing was pretty simple. We did not play there last year, but we're going back this year just, again, having a young team, three freshmen. You know, there's that adjustment period. So it's kind of sort of like playing at home.
Right.
You know, so they get that first tournament under their belt, but they don't have to fly across the country to do it. So hopefully there's a little bit more, you know, comfort there. And then the Louisville thing is simply because they're hosting NCAA regionals. So you never know where you're going to get sent, but it's a golf course that really none of us had ever seen before. So it creates an opportunity there. Wake Forest, they tried to host up at Primlin, which was absolutely gorgeous and amazing for a couple of years. We just had weather issues.
Oh, terrible weather, like two or three years in a row. I mean, it was bad.
Yeah, I mean, like, could hardly ever get in 54 holes in 1 year. We went up there, and it was unbelievable. I mean, no one's fault. We just sat in fog for 2 days, so nobody ever hit a golf shot. So they're going to host at Old Town in about 3 or 4 weeks. Notre Dame, they're very similar to us, you know, where they've always had a home tournament, but I think they're, you know, they're trying to make the field a little bit better, a little bit stronger. One of the ways they did that was the individual winner received a web.com sponsor exemption. You know, so I know a lot of guys are excited about that. And then Coach McGraw, which, you know, obviously you know him really well, he was kind enough to invite us out to his event. And it's something we're really excited about. One, to go out there and compete against some of the best teams in the country, like Oklahoma State's going to be there to play Royal Oaks. But it's a different format. It's a format that we never, ever see, which is your five guys all play together. You know, so I think there's some chemistry things there. I think there's some camaraderie things. I even think there's a little bit of strategy there. And I think it's something that our team, just knowing the guys that we have, the closeness of the group, I think it's something that they're really, really going to enjoy.
He is the head men's golf coach for the North Carolina Tar Heels. That's Andrew DiBattista. And when we return, the Ryder Cup, the FedEx Cup, and what's next for NBC with Ron Mintz of Fansided.com. Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors, and now joined by the golf analyst at Fansided.com, Ron Mintz. Ron, I want to begin with the Ryder Cup. I know you and I, neither one, have much juice for the FedEx Cup right now, but I'm very excited following who's going to make it, who isn't, and we'll get to the American side in a minute because I think a lot of the drama has been taken away from the American side. To me, the drama is with the European team because of how they have to pick the team and the different ways that you can qualify. We're not going to go into that now. Right now, there are four that have officially made the European Ryder Cup team. Molinari, Justin Rose, Tyrrell Hatton, and Tommy Fleetwood. Now, that being said, just on the outside looking in, we got John Rahm, we got Torbjorn Olsen, Rory McIlroy, Alex Noren, Russell Knox, Eddie Pepperell. I'm not going to get to a name that you know, Matthew Fitzpatrick and Rafa Cabrera-Bello. That's the top 12 as we speak. Now, you have to go way, 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 way down on the list before you even start sniffing the name of Sergio Garcia. Can you imagine a European Ryder Cup team in which Sergio Garcia is not named as a captain's pick?
And no, and what bothers me, Charlie, is it doesn't seem to bother him. I don't know if it's because he's a newlywed and he's still enjoying the honeymoon or what, but he was asked yesterday if he was asked, would he be a vice captain? And he said no. He didn't. He really wasn't interested in doing that. He's done it one other time, but no, it just doesn't seem right for him not to be on the team. And with Roy taking off last week, I just got off the media thing here. The bubble projections—they've already projected bubbles all the way up to the top 30, and they've got Rory right on the bubble to get in the tournament championship.
You know, and you brought up the fact that Sergio doesn't seem to care about, you know, playing in the Ryder Cup or being a part of the team regardless, and you're talking about Rory on the bubble of the FedEx Cup. There seems to be a pervasive attitude among a lot of players these days, and these are top players, in that I don't know if it's their public image they're trying to portray or whatnot, but this whole apathy of, well, I really don't care if I'm there or if I'm not. I'm not used to athletes, top level athletes, not caring. It seems to me that if you're out there performing, if you're Rory McIlroy and you are, to everyone's eye, one of the top three players in the world, bar none, you're already going to the Hall of Fame based on your credentials at this point, competing would be a part of your DNA. Wanting to be the best would be a part of your DNA, and it just seems that it's not.
No, and I hate to say this because, you know, I'm not a mind reader, but you have to think that with these large contracts these young guys are signing, and they know they're set for life financially, does that take some of the desire away from them? I hope not, but you have to think maybe that's part of it.
You would hope that the money would free them up to be even more consumed
exactly.
with wanting to win trophies. It's just weird. Ron Mintz with Fansided.com is our guest taking dead aim. Back to the European Ryder Cup team. Here's a name that is in 21st place right now, and I feel like he's had a really, really good season, and that's Ian Poulter. You got to imagine he's going to be named, right?
I hope so, because, I mean, even, you know, he's had a good year this year. He finally got rid of all his outside interest, you know, selling a clothing line and some other things he was involved in, but he won't comment. He won't say what they were. But he says it's cleared his head up to where he can concentrate on golf. And I always thought if he would just play golf, he would be one of the best players out there, and now we're seeing it. But he waited too late. You know, this is a two-year average or two-year total. And he's had a great year, but he missed that first year. So I don't know if you – is he 21st now, I think?
Yeah, 21st in the points, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know as a captain if you – I mean, you can go as low as you want to, but I don't know if I've ever heard of anybody going that low. Have you?
Well, he'd have to go even lower to get Garcia. I think Garcia's like 23rd or 25th. At this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like I said, Europe has such a weird way of picking because there's a way to get in by playing the European Tour with points. There's world ranking. It's all kind of weird and convoluted. And so you kind of go, okay, what does this mean? Ian Poulter's played great on the PGA Tour, but he's only 21st in their Ryder Cup points. It's all kind of strange.
Yeah, that's the thing I don't like about the Ryder Cup. I wish they would change it. And both teams have the same selection process. We've gotten a little bit closer, you know, as far as the dates go, and with us picking, we're getting one pick that Sunday before it starts, and that's really a burden on the player and the coach. But
do you like that last pick? I was talking with Ron Green Jr. earlier about this, and, you know, that rule was made when Billy Horschel had that great run a few years ago where he, I think it was in 2014, when he finished second at Boston and then won the last two events in the Tour Championship, and everybody's like, wow, Horschel's hotter than a match, but the Ryder Cup team had already been named, and so it's kind of this Billy Horschel rule that we wait until the last minute to name the last player. And what we've discovered over the years is, you know, that year was kind of an outlier. No one has done that before or since, and so I kind of don't like that last pick being held that late. How do you feel about it?
I don't like it. I'll tell you why, because I'm just throw some names out there. Say you've got Brooks Koepka. In the first year when they start tracking points, he doesn't do anything. He, you know, nobody even knows who he is. And then he comes along the second year and wins two majors like he did. In another tournament, he's won three this year. And he's the hottest thing in golf right now. And so how can a captain not pick him? But yet you've got another player who's, say, 20th. And overall, for 2 years, he's probably had better 2 years than Brooks. And he would have made it had Brooks not got on fire the last 2 months of the year. I just don't think that's fair. I think.
Well, I'll defend this. Brooks Koepka has won three of the last six major championships that he's entered. And if we're going to judge you know, great players, then we need to judge how great players perform in the biggest stages. And if you're 3 for your last 6 in major championships, you know, you're going to be on my team. And I mean, he's number one in the points. And it's because those tournaments are weighted that way. So, I mean, you know, you can be, you know, Kevin Kisner or whoever you want to be, but if you haven't performed on the biggest stages like these other guys, then you don't deserve to have the points of these other guys.
Exactly, and I preface it by saying I'm just throwing these names out there. Of course, I knew Brooks. I mean, how could you not know?
Oh, yeah, no. I'm just being devil's advocate, Ron.
But the other thing, it's just like the world golf rankings. Nobody likes the way we do it, but nobody's come up with a better way to do it. And John Rahm shot up to the top 5 in just a few months after he finished college, and everybody said, how can you do that? Well, I was on another radio show that week, and I said, well, you don't understand. It's based on a 2-year average, but they don't take any points away from you the first year because you don't have any.
Right.
But the second year, they start subtracting points. When they add points, they subtract the points for that same week the previous year. So now, you know, well, John's still in the top 10, but he's not going to be number one anytime soon, and he's not climbing. He's not moving up. He's sort of in a holding pattern. But it looked like he was going to be number one after about 6 months out of college, the way the system's set up. And I just think there has to be a better way to do that, too.
Ron Mintz with Fansided.com is our guest taking Dead Aim. We've already sort of segued over to the American team, so let's talk about it a little bit. The 8 that were automatic qualifiers, Koepka, Johnson, Thomas, Reed, Watson, Spieth, Fowler, Simpson. Love them. Love them to death. Take all 8 of them and glad they're there. I think it's a foregone conclusion. Phil Mickelson will be a captain's pick. Tiger Woods, who climbed all the way up to 11th after the PGA and actually playing just 1 year, to be honest with you, he's right in there. DeChambeau, after what he did last week, I think he locks up a captain's pick. That leaves that one captain's pick left for Captain Furyk. There's two thoughts here. Do you go with a veteran or do you go with Tony Finau? This is a pretty veteran squad we have at this point, so you could afford to give it to a rookie like Finau. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, if you go on the way he's playing right now, I would have to pick Tony Finau. But I'm if I was a betting man, I would tell you Kuchar's probably going to be the guy. And that's what I'm hearing from all my sources. Because he, and I don't understand this, he's really good in the team room. I keep hearing that every Ryder Cup. Well, we don't play the Ryder Cup in the team room. We play it on the golf course. And we don't get points for ping pong either. So, but that's what they always say. Well, he's great with the players. They love him in the team room. And, you know, it's like they're having a motivational convention or something in there. I'm not making fun of them. I mean, they deserve to have a good time, but and Kuchar's, you know, he's right there in it, but he's not playing as good as Tony right now. So if you go what Jim Furyk said he was going to do, he was going to go with the guy that's trending or is playing the best golf. And if you look at the stats and everything, it's Tony, not Kuch.
Ron Mintz of Fansided.com, our guest taking Dead Aim. Get you out of here on this. It's something we were talking about off air earlier. The Ryder Cup is going to be on NBC, and we're coming to an end of an era. I had forgotten, you know, Johnny Miller has been on the air with NBC forever. I think I had forgotten how many years that he had been the color analyst, and he's cut back his schedule so much, and I think he's finally said, okay, that's it. I don't want to leave Utah anymore. I'm out. And so Johnny Miller is going to retire. Who are your thoughts as far as who replaces Johnny Miller in the analyst chair next to Dan Hicks?
I got a piece of paper out last night thinking you might ask me that. And I've got about 10 to 15 names, but none of them really meet all the criteria. And none of them, I don't know, Johnny has a way of, you either love him or hate him, but you can't dispute the fact that he knows what he's talking about. I mean, I even put Jack Nicklaus's name on there. I know Jack wouldn't do it, but he would be great at it. And you and I talked one time about Lee Trevino coming back. He won't do it, but I'd love to see it.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's see.
NBC owns the Golf Channel, so naturally, Randall Sam Lee's name will come up, but I don't know, Charlie. I just can't think of anybody.
I just think about the guys who have been in the analyst chair when we think about it. And we go to CBS, and Ken Venturi, of course, was there forever. Well, Ken Venturi was a U.S. Open champion, all right? Yeah. Ken Venturi was one of Hogan's boys. Ken Venturi had the gravitas behind him. You go back even further on ABC. Byron Nelson was a color analyst for years and years. Venturi was replaced by Lanny Watkins. Again, another major champion and Ryder Cupper, who's now been replaced by Nick Faldo, who's won six major championships. ABC back in the day had Azinger and Strange, who are now with Fox. They are major championship winners. Now, what's interesting is Fox has Brad Faxon, and Brad Faxon hasn't won anything of note. And that's kind of an odd thing. He's regarded as a great putting guru, but Brad Faxon never won a major championship. He was a solid pro, but he never won anything major. NBC has experimented off and on, and I think I would not be surprised if this happened, because he hasn't been great, but he hasn't been awful, and he could be better. And that's Justin Leonard. You got a guy who's won a major championship, contended in many others, finished second at a PGA, second another time in an Open Championship, had a couple of chances to win a U.S. Open, and he won a Players Championship. So Justin Leonard could step into that chair with those kind of credentials.
Yeah, I was very surprised how well he did. I can't remember what tournament it was now, but he did a great job. And another name I just thought of that I had on my list was David Duvall. I think he has come a long way from when he first started. He's very polished now, and he speaks with authority, and he knows what he's talking about. And, of course, he's a major winner as well.
Rumor had it that the last time Johnny Miller signed this contract that said, I'm only going to show up for a couple of events, that they offered the job to David, and David turned it down. I wonder if they do come back to David Duvall. That's a great, great pick.
David's a big family man now, and that's great. I don't think he wants to travel, but I do think he misses golf. And the last score I saw a few weeks ago, maybe it was the PGA, he had an open around 80, so I think he's probably given up on playing the tour again until he gets on the Champions Tour. So, yeah, he might be interested, but he does a very good job. I think he does a good job when he's paired. I like the way Golf Channel does it. They have three people, you know, Randall, Frank Novello, and David Duvall, and that's always been a good combination, I thought.
He is the golf analyst with Fansided.com. That's Ron Mintz. Hey, I'd also like to thank the head men's golf coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, Andrew DiBattista, and Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there right now, articles about whether or not Bryson DeChambeau is underrated, and where are we now with the Ryder Cup team? Hey, weather-wise, it's Labor Day weekend, summer's last gasp, and it looks like Mother Nature is going to cooperate. So if you do tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.